Welcome back to Random Trek Review, the podcast where we analyze, discuss, and review randomly selected Star Trek episodes, or this week, the second parts of episodes, pulled 2 weeks ago. My name's Andrew, and I'll be your host for this edition of RTR, and I'm joined by my good buddy Matt for the second half of our first ever two-parter, Descent, Part 2. Now, Matt, give me your glasses, or I'm going to take them by force.
I don't think they look that good on you, and they probably wouldn't be much use unless you are extremely nearsighted. So,
I am, actually, so there we have it.
I better be careful then.
All right, so we are looking at the second half of Descent Part 2. This is kind of unfamiliar ground. This is our first two-parter, so because we have double the episodes, I'm getting double the score this week, so... Matt, give me a little recall on the second part of the episode, and this week you're rating me out of 5 metaphasic shields.
The good old metaphasic shields. Yeah, I went back and listened to it because it was several weeks ago. I didn't quite remember everything you said, but you were pretty much spot on with like the main plot, with Lore sort of taking over the Borg. And also Riker and Worf on the planet kind of looking for the captain and LaForge and Troy. The only thing I'd say you really missed was you made no mention of the whole Crusher thing right. on the Enterprise. But other than that, I think you pretty much nailed the plot. And you made mention of some of the main guest characters that were in it. So I'm going to give you a rating of 4 out of 5 metaphasic shields.
All right. So that's a total of 8 out of 10 for Descent.
You're very consistent with this one.
That's true. Yeah, I definitely, when you have the two-parter episodes, if you're playing along at home, it is very difficult to remember, A, what happened in what section, and also which characters were doing which thing. Like I said, it was Riker and Crusher, but it was what Riker and Worf. Crusher was on the ship, like that kind of like little small mistakes. But that's just kind of, there's like 1,000 some odd episodes, right? It's hard to sometimes remember who's doing what and why.
There's a lot of episodes to remember, yes.
So let's take a look at this one specifically. This is The Next Generation, Season 7. Isn't that crazy? Episode 1, the original air date, September 20th, 1993. We have guest stars Brian Cousins as Croesus again, James Horan as Barnaby, Jonathan DeLarco as Hugh, and Alex Dutcher as Ensign Tate. This one was written by Rene Echeverria and directed by Alex Siger. So let's take a look at the synopsis. The Sons of Soong reveal their plan to eliminate all biological life in the galaxy, beginning the rule of artificial life with them as their leaders. Dun, dun, dun. But back aboard the Enterprise, acting Captain Crusher and her skeleton crew are beaming up the remaining members of the crew from the planet below, holding off to the very last second to raise the shields as the Borg ship comes into range. Back on the planet, Worf and Riker continue to look for the captain, search teams as they cut to them being held into holding cell. Data even going so far as to removing Geordi's visor, threatening to take it by force. This is not the same Data that we're used to. Back on the ship, one-off officers Barnaby and Tate are discussing ways to get the remaining people off of the planet. Before they finally decide to use the planet as a block to sneak back into the planet's atmosphere and grab the remaining crew. Meanwhile, Data and Lore discuss the strange experiments that they seem to be doing on the Borg before sending Data to try some of these experiments on Data's old friend, Geordi LaForge. Despite having a 60% mortality rate and a guarantee of brain damage, Data begins the strange experiments on Geordi, despite Geordi's best attempts to remind him of their happier times. Eventually, Crusher hides the ship in the sun's corona using the basic shields, remember that from Suspicions? And Picard and LaForge are able to reset Data's subroutines using an interlink transceiver. Some smart thinking allows Ensign Tate to create a solar flare that destroys the Borg ship. While on the planet, Lore asks Data to prove his ultimate loyalty and kill Picard. When Data's unable to do it, Lore says that he'll make the ultimate sacrifice and kill his own brother. Luckily, Worf, Riker, and Hugh makes the big sacrifice, jumping in front of the beam and saving Data's life. A huge firefight breaks out, and eventually Data has to make the difficult decision to deactivate Lore, even if it means not having his emotion chips anymore. All right, Matt, now sometimes these second parts of two-part episodes don't ever live up to the excitement of the cliffhanger, right? I mean, that maybe is a discussion for another time or a blog post, but how did you feel that this one captured the hangingness of the cliff, the anticipation? Did you think that, A, it paid off? And then give me kind of a general sense of how you felt about the overall episode.
The short answer is no. I thought, I lived through this summer, as you know. Like, the first time I saw this episode was during the original run, and I had to wait like 3 months or however long it was. And I was like 10 years old at the time, but I thought about it a lot. Like, what's going to happen? What, like, it was built up pretty big, and like they left you hanging off of a pretty steep cliff. And then when it actually came on, I was expecting more.
Yeah, it's kind of like a regular episode if you think about it.
Yeah, it was. I almost feel like this was one of those episodes where it was kind of like in no man's land, as far as like if they'd sort of eliminated some parts of it, they could have maybe made it like just a single episode and it would have been really good. Or if they'd filled in some parts, they could have made it an even better two-part episode.
Yeah.
But I feel like it was sort of in that, like, sort of mushy middle where you either have to do one of the two, and I thought that by stretching it out, I just felt like they didn't really stretch, like, fill things in quite enough.
Yeah, and I guess maybe the other thing that I would just kind of ask to it is, like, do you have a better idea for where this episode could have went? Because it kind of goes almost exactly like what you would envision, right? If you were sitting down and you were like, okay, well, how can they get out of this? You probably say, you know, they're evil for a bit, and then Data turns and Lore is defeated. Like, that's pretty much what you would probably guess would happen, and then that does happen, right?
I don't know. I would have expected, like, this giant armada of Borg ships, like, coming to destroy the Federation, because that's what Lore said they were going to do, or what Data said they were going to do. You know, and then the Enterprise has to, like, beat these, like, insurmountable odds and come up with some, like, ingenious plan to stop them. And that's what 10-year-old Matt was
thinking. You were kind of thinking, like, where Deep Space Nine would eventually go, with, like, the end of the episode being a massive kind of war starting or something.
Well, or at least maybe the specter of that sort of hanging over their heads for the course of the episode until they figure out how to stop them.
Yeah, you know, I kind of agree with that. Just kind of going to what I kind of felt about it was, and again, it is really difficult to live up to the anticipation sometimes with these particular episodes. And I didn't necessarily go with the whole armada showing up, although I do kind of like that. Like, it turns out that this is really just a one-off ship, right? In the end, that's what it is.
Yep.
And maybe it would have been better if there was Borg people or more cubes or something show up. That maybe would be a good idea. The problem with that is that, like, they already established in Best of Both Worlds, like, the Federation can't even deal with one cube, right? So if there's even, like, if there's two or three or something, like, they have no chance. So that's kind of, I guess, the way that they brought this back was by having their own ship that was kind of separate and isolated, and it was more of a Lore, and he has the specific kind of Borg, not necessarily the Borg.
Mm.
And so, yeah, to be honest with you, it went almost exactly the way I thought it would. And when I saw this episode originally, I was kind of thinking, I bet you by the end of this episode, Data's going to be back as the, you know, commander on the Enterprise, and Lore's going to be either gone, run away, or dead, and the Borg is going to be neutralized. That's going to be all there is. And that's essentially what we got, right? And I'm not saying that it's bad, per se. It's just, like you said, it doesn't live up to the hype of what they established, right?
Well, yeah, it was... I mean, you look at this as a cliffhanger. I mean, it's pretty high up there as far as, like, you know, which one leaves you anticipating more. Yeah, I mean, sometimes that letdown is a little bit inevitable.
True. I mean, unless they want to make a major direction shift with the show, you're pretty much going to have to get back to the same spot that you were at, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And I think one of the things with Best of Both Worlds and stuff was I don't think that they knew that Patrick Stewart was coming back, so people were like, oh my god, is this how they're going to write him off and all this other kind of stuff. Whereas this one, I don't think there was ever really a chance that Data was going to be evil for the rest of the show.
No, you're probably right.
All right, so let's talk about a little bit of background development stuff. Not a whole ton of stuff for part two here, but originally Barclay was supposed to be part of the skeleton crew rather than Tate Barnaby. Do you think that it was a good idea to leave him out? Would that kind of maybe be too bumbly, too goofy for this kind of an episode, or would you rather see somebody that you know rather than these two randoms that you literally never see again?
I don't mind Barclay. I think that could have made for some memorable scenes of, you know, bumbling old Barclay who, you know, stumbles around and somehow manages to get things right in the end. But I don't know. I think it might. I don't think it would have been, you know, I don't think it would have been bad. And it was, you know, when I read that, I was like, well, it's kind of a shame that they couldn't get him.
Yeah, in terms of continuity, I almost feel like it would make a bit more sense because he's probably a little bit more senior than like an ensign. I know they went with like a skeleton crew, but that maybe is a little bit too low. You know what I mean? Just in terms of like that, now that person's on the bridge and they're your best chance at defeating the Borg in this situation. I don't know.
It would also make sense for Barclay to be left behind because, I mean, he's not exactly ideal candidate to be scouring the planet looking for, you know, Picard and the rest while there's Borg kicking around.
Exactly. And he has shown to be able to come through in the clutch in the past, so.
Yes, just not in the most, glamorous way.
No, but, I mean, if it works, it works.
Yeah.
Did you also notice that building? Did it seem familiar somehow?
Yeah, I remembered it mostly from Power Rangers.
Yeah, that's like Zordon's house or Zordon's lair or something, right? That's kind of like where they hang out and they get their missions and stuff like that from?
Yep, I didn't recognize it at first, but when I started reading that it was used in other shows and I read about the Power Rangers, I was like, oh yes, that is the same building. The
main house. I guess it's kind of like, I think it's like a water treatment plant that's in the California area, like kind of in LA, so they probably were thinking like, well, there's a crazy looking building that we can just kind of go film it, put a little filter on, away you go, right?
Yeah.
Now there's a more closely linked Star Trek reference. Did you notice that? Did you pick up on that one?
Not as much. I read it and I guess they're telling the truth. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess. This is the Kittimer camp from Star Trek VI. And I didn't know that. I didn't pick up on it. I feel like maybe it was kind of done as like an insert or something. Like they used the building, but then the land was different or something.
Or maybe a different angle.
Different angle or different colors or something. Because, yeah, I did not pick up on that at all. But kind of a cool little piece of trivia.
They're all cool, yes.
All right, let's hit the plot. I know that we already talked about this, but I guess it is probably the biggest piece of the show when you come back after a long break like this. And that, of course, is the teaser. We left part one, The Sons of Soon. 3 months later, we come back. This is the payoff. Does it pay off for you, or does this fall flat?
Well, I think if we're looking strictly at the teaser, I don't think it really took away from it. Because, you know, basically he's just like explaining further.
Yeah, it doesn't really add much to it, right?
It doesn't really add much to it, but I mean, there's still room for it to, for the episode to kind of take off. So, I don't think looking strictly at the teaser, that was necessarily like an immediate letdown. But, I don't know. I think they maybe could have done more.
I think they needed something a bit bigger. Maybe something that would be more shocking. I mean, they could have maybe shot one of them with a phaser or something, and it maybe alludes to the fact that they were killed or something, because I think they needed something to pop here, and it was just kind of a minute and a half more than what we got from the first, like, reveal of the Sons of Soon, you know? Mm-hmm. So there was something about, like, they just say, oh, we're going to take over. Well, yeah, that was implied before. Maybe they could have done a little bit more. My second question to you is like, do these ever really land? I mean, you can go to the best two-parters, the best cliffhangers of all TV. Is there any one specifically, Star Trek or otherwise, that you really feel like they actually paid it off with the reveal of what it was? Maybe we'll start just with Star Trek, and then we'll go from there.
I don't know. I always look at basics. To me, that was a really good cliffhanger that did kind of pay off, in the sense that they don't, like, get the ship back until, like, the very end.
And that's a ballsy move, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's definitely one of those things where it would be very difficult to do it because everybody's expecting, oh yeah, we got the shit back for sure. But then to kind of hold it off, I think Best of Both Worlds is one of the best payoffs. I know that everybody says the second part is not as good as the first, but if you throw family in there as well as kind of like a little mini three-parter, it really does, I mean, it's the best possible way they could get back to where they were at.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, Best of Both Worlds is
probably one of the best.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess you can't really include like All Good Things and stuff because those were like extended ones, like the finales, but... Yeah, it's a very difficult thing to do because, especially of the time, you had to get back to basics, and that makes it very difficult, right?
Yeah, you gotta hit the reset button somehow. Yeah.
So, I mean, after the teaser, we kind of go back to Captain Crusher and these two recruits that are beaming up people. This is the whole shields versus transporter thing, which I think it's most of the time, actually. You can only transport when your shields are down.
Yep.
And if the shields go up, you can't transport through it.
Yep.
They've broken this in the past, and they've warped. They've done transport at warp and stuff, which is just... I don't like that. This is perfect because I like knowing the rules. The rules of the engagement are the shields can't be up if you're trying to beam people. And this is why it's good, is this kind of tension where we got to get them up 40 more people, 20 more people. They even say they're going to use the... Like, not the main transporters, but, like, the cargo bay ones and stuff like that, which is great. I love that kind of stuff. What did you think of, I guess, first off, a Crusher's command style, but also, like, this scene in general? Is this, like, a good tension-building scene, or do you kind of find this to be a bit more, like, just kind of daily business?
No, it was good for the tension. I mean, there's always... I mean, maybe that's why the writers decided, oh, let's empty the ship out onto the surface of the planet to, I thought as far as, like, building some tension, I thought it kind of worked. I mean, I didn't think it was bad.
And what do you think about these two new people that we have? Would you have rather had somebody else, or are you happy that these are just, whatever, these randos?
I wasn't really a big fan of that whole thing.
Yeah.
It's just two generic, you know, nobodies that we never see again. And I mean, I just felt like they were, the conflict between them, it just seemed, like, really forced and kind of fake to me.
Yeah, I guess they were trying to create kind of a situation where she's like the young ensign and he's a bit more experienced, and there's a lot of scenes where he's going, well, my calculations say, but she's supposed to be kind of some sort of like young upstart that's really bright. And I think that they were trying to go with something there, but it didn't really work for me either. I do like Crusher as a captain though. And I mean, we eventually find out in the alternate future that she ends up captaining her own ship. But I think she's pretty good here, and she's pretty much like your run-of-the-mill Star Trek captain, right? Going back to where, going to plan, and then going, well, let's just send the buoy, and we'll do it ourselves. Like, that is very Star Trek captain-y, right? So yeah. I think that was a good, I thought that was a good kind of way of introducing it. Now, we go back to the planet, and we've got kind of the first interactions with Data, Geordi, and Lore. So Data takes the visor from Geordi. Just, I guess this is to make him show he's so evil now, right? He is going to take one of these like basic senses. He gives it to Lore. There's kind of a funny scene where Lore puts it on and he's kind of goofing around with the visor and stuff like that. Why do they need the visor again? And what was your kind of overall feel on this scene?
Well, I remember Geordi said that he could like see the like carrier wave between them, so that, and I guess Lore realized that, so he wanted to take the visor away.
Right.
So that was why Lore wanted it.
Right.
Aside from, like, trying it on.
And just kind of goofing about. But was there also something to do with the Borg experiments that they were doing? They maybe needed the technology or something, or no?
I don't think anything like that was mentioned. No.
It was just, okay, the carrier waves. Okay, I didn't pick that up, so that's pretty good. So it's kind of a strange episode, actually, because it's broken up into, like, three major parts. You've got the Crusher part. You've got the Data, Lore, Picard, Geordi, Troi part. And then you've got the Worf and the Riker part. Let's maybe just get the Riker Worf stuff kind of out of the way, because it's very much like C storyline, I felt. I don't know, maybe you feel differently, but essentially Worf and Riker are looking for them. They find an underground kind of area. They go down, they find Hugh. There's a bunch of exposition that Lore is doing experiments on the Borg and it's like killing them. Hugh's kind of upset because they sent him back with emotions, and it actually is not really what he wanted. He wanted to be part of the collective, and they were kind of cast out. And then they eventually helped show them up at the end. So talk to me about that little C-plot, and the use of Hugh, as well as Laura's playing. So I'm not even 100% sure I know what Laura's playing is.
Well, I don't think anyone really knows what Laura's playing was, because like we were talking about that after we recorded last time. We were like, what the heck was he doing? Like, what? But anyways, as far as the whole Riker Worf thing, yeah, you're right that that was sort of like the lowest level plot that there was in this episode. There were more than usual. I thought it was okay that they included this. I thought the reveal of Hugh was a little bit surprising, even though like they had alluded to it throughout part one and even into part two. I don't know what it was that you know they just sort of get captured by these Borg and then all of a sudden they're in this like underground,
well, the cave
cavern, yeah, or whatever, and then he just like I think Riker's like, Hugh? And he turns around and then he's got that one line just before it goes to commercial. And I actually thought that line was pretty like impactful. How he's like, why are you here, Commander Riker? And then it just like goes to commercial.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I was like I thought the way that line was delivered was pretty effective.
Yeah, I always liked that actor. I like him very, very much in Iborg. I just don't know if they really used him enough here. I kind of feel it's a bit wasted.
So he was in what, like three scenes?
Well, yeah, and I mean, he was supposed, like, the whole idea that we were talking about last week, where he's the whole beginning, right? He's patient zero. He's the one that created this whole line of Borg who have emotions and feelings, and it's him that is the reason that Laura's able to even get in here and infiltrate them and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he has that one good line, but then, I mean, after that, he does the big sacrifice at the end, which we'll get to, but I don't know. I kind of feel like it was wasted. I was kind of expecting more. I was kind of excited to see how this all kind of came about, but it's just literally thrown away in two or three lines, and then they show those Borg that are sick or dying or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, what was up with those guys?
Well, that was the result of like Laura's previous experiment, I think, was what that was supposed
and
to be.
And so was Laura's plan here to take the biological aspect out of the Borg?
Yes.
Okay. But it's kind of a 50-50 thing, so...
Well, I think he was trying to like devise a method that like their artificial implants would completely take over and the biological part,
right,
would just be gone.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that kind of makes
sense.
But
I guess it didn't work because,
right,
you got that one Borg who like had like a like shrunken head.
Yeah.
And the other one whose like implants were going all haywire.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it makes sense in terms of the story that they were going to get rid of all the biological life forms. Why wouldn't you just use the Borg to wipe out all the life forms? And then at the last minute, just wipe out the Borg people.
I don't know. Laura's plan is not really all that clear, I don't think.
Yeah, you know what? And I'm not even necessarily against that. It's just that if you're going to be the evil scientist and you're not going to be very good at it, you have to maybe be more maniacal and more kind of crazy, like just doing it for the sake of doing it. And I don't know if that necessarily came across, because there's just so many things going on. You've got Lore, he did this whole big elaborate plan so he could get data, and then with the two of them, and he's controlling them with the emotions, and they're doing these experiments to try to get the flesh parts out of the Borg, and then they're doing the thing with Geordi, and they need the visor because it's got he's seeing the waves. I mean, is it this too much, is I guess maybe my question. Is it just too convoluted?
I felt like there were parts they could have taken out, and
yeah,
parts that they could have maybe filled in a little more. Like, that's sort of what I was getting at, like, right off the beginning here, is that I felt like there was just, like, a little bit too much going on. For me, I feel like they could have completely cut out the whole Crusher thing and just focused strictly on Lore and Data and what they were trying to do.
Well, yeah, especially since this is Lore's last episode, it seems like he's not really in it that much.
Yeah, and maybe you make, you know, and maybe that's what the focus of the episode.
Yeah, and maybe what they could have done is just, like, Crusher just gets all the people out and just goes back to the thing. And that's
well,
it.
Well, yeah.
Right? There's not the whole sun thing and all that kind of stuff. Like,
mm-hmm,
they just go back. That maybe would be the better idea. Although that is kind of an interesting idea in and of itself, is the whole mesophasic seals, which we'll get to in a minute. But
yeah,
let's just kind of go back to... Well, let's go back to Crusher anyway. So they do the planet blockout thing, right?
Yep.
So they're going to come back and get them. I don't know if I like this as much, because the orders were, this is the flagship, you've got civilians on board, the Borg ship way outmatches you. You need to get back. You need to get to the Federation. Let them know so that we can get the reinforcements. Then Crusher has this line like, the buoys are just as good. Is it though? I mean, you're really risking a lot of lives. They say that they got pretty much everybody back, right? And so then they're going to go back for a handful of people. I don't know if I necessarily agree with it. And they even say ahead of time, like, the planet can block them out for 45 seconds, but they need a minute. So it's not even going to be enough time anyway. And they still try to go back.
And then Mr. Hotshot Barnaby's like, well, we'll drop out of warp at the very last possible second.
Yeah, but then that just...
ramming into the planet.
Yeah, that just seems even more risky.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's pretty
risky. I mean, if I was... And if you were left on the planet, there's nothing... There's no real danger on the planet. You're just going to be camping.
Yeah, pretty much.
So I don't know. I just don't know if I like this whole, like, Crusher going back kind of thing. I think that there's a little bit of nonsensical aspect of it. And I think that it's just too risky. If you're in charge of like 1,000 people and I'm on a planet camping, like, don't come back for me. Like, it's fine. Like, you can just come back when you've got like 50 ships.
Like I said, I thought this whole part of the episode was not very good.
All right. Well, let's maybe flip over to something that you did think was good, which is the Data Geordi thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
the Data experiments on Geordi. I don't know what to say. I'm going to let you, because this is a very strange kind of way of doing this. There's some good parts to it, but Geordi, Picard, Troi are in the cell, and it's a lot of Geordi coming and getting tortured and putting them back and then taking them and doing it some more. What did you think of that?
I thought the experimenting on LaForge, it was pretty impactful, just because, like, they're supposed to be, like, best friends.
Mm-hmm.
And Lore's, like, got Data so, like, his mind so warped that he's, like, doing these experiments on LaForge that are probably going to kill him, mm-hmm. ultimately. You know, I thought it showed just how strong of a hold Lore had over him. He'd never do anything like that on his own, like, not even close.
And there is even that scene where he kind of questions it, and then that part where he uses the fingernail to, like, increase the emotions.
Oh, God.
Oh, God, I hate that. I hate that. But he increases it, and Data's like, oh, give me some more. Like, he's almost, like, in pleasure from the emotions. I don't know. I will say those little, like, suction cup things that they put on him are pretty gnarly. It seems really kind of messed up. Like, I would not want that done to me, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I kind of also feel like Picard and Troi are just kind of sitting around in the prison, and that's kind of it.
I'm gonna ask you a question. Do you think it would have been as impactful if he had, say, been doing the experiments on Troi?
Probably not, because it's the best friend dynamic that's kind of being played at, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Are you kind of leaning towards because it's a woman, or just because it's the telekinetic powers, or because it's just not his best friend?
Yeah, that's what I was getting at.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. And I think that part of it is probably the only thing that really kind of holds up. There's that bit where he comes in and he uses Picard's voice. I thought that was kind of funny. And there's...
I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, that was good. And then Geordi's going over the memories and kind of trying to draw him out of it, but it's not really working. That part was kind of nice. I think that was kind of interesting, but I feel like I've seen this better. You know what it reminds me of a lot, actually, is remember in Empire Strikes Back when they hook Han up to, like, the torture device, and then they drag him back and they throw him in the cell, and he's all worn out, and he goes, oh, they didn't even ask me any questions. That is such a great scene. Like, that is just a perfect, you know, like, they don't show the torture, really. They just, you know, you just see the after effects, and he's just all worn out and broken and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. This, I don't really feel like there was a tremendous amount of pain being. It was just kind of the fear that he would be unfixable, basically, if he didn't get remedied fast enough, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I liked it, but I wasn't that crazy about it, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they could have maybe done things a little differently to make...
Would you think it would be better if the torture was more extreme, or is that not Star Trek?
I think you are sort of getting into... I mean, torture is very... The concept is very non-Star Trek, so I think you have to tone it down more than maybe you would, especially back then.
Chain of command, though.
Yeah. That was, I think, more, like, psychological, though.
True, but I think that there is, like... And I'm thinking that's maybe the level they needed to maybe go. I know that it kind of only ever goes there very rarely. This is kind of more of a jovial episode. I mean, for something that has torture in it, like, they're kind of goofing around, they're joking about it. Like you said, it didn't really have the impact that you would have envisioned it had from the beginning of the first one.
Hey, this is Matt, and you are listening to Random Trek Review. To get the latest podcasts and to read the RTR blog, visit our website at randomtrekreview.blogspot.com. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes by searching for Random Trek Review. You can find us on social media, Twitter at Rando Trek Review, and on Instagram at Random Trek Review. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions and prefer old school email, feel free to drop us a line at randomtrekreview@gmail.com. Now back to the show.
Okay, so let's continue on. Let's go back to the ship and Crusher. And so they get the people on board. The ship comes around the planet. And they realize they're not going to be able to get back to the escape. Don't know what to do. They kind of debate it. They discuss it. They eventually decide they're going to hide in the corona of the sun. Now, this is the metaphasic shields from Suspicions. Which, yes. If you recall, Crusher was a big proponent of trying that out. She even went so far as to take the shuttle in herself.
Yes.
And do it against the wishes and the commands of some of the other people. So she's really all about these shields. And it seems to work well. Yep. Is it never used again?
Not that I can remember.
So doesn't this seem like this would be like a really good thing to have, like all the time?
Sure. Yeah. I'd say so.
Yeah.
Some special shield that lets you hide in the corona of the sun.
Yeah. Especially since the Borg ship didn't have it, right? So they can't chase them in.
Yeah, I feel like that might come in handy once in a while.
Yeah, I guess this is kind of something that happens with Star Trek. They have an idea for an episode, and then that's kind of as far as they can really take it. Because if they had that, then every time somebody would say, well, why not just go into the sun? Well, why not go into the sun? Well, why not go into the sun, right? So yeah. Maybe they should have done some sort of thing where like it shorted out and it was like too dangerous or something. They kind of did that with Suspicions, right? They said it's too dangerous to really like to rely on. But I feel like maybe they should have done the same thing here where like it almost blows them up and they go, wow, we're never using that again. Like it was way too dangerous.
Yeah, that was my whole problem with this whole thing, was that, like, they never really gave the sense that this was, like, dangerous.
Yeah, they just, like, fire them up, let's get in there.
Yeah, like, they, like, she fires up the schematics, and they're like, well, this has never been tested, and she's like, ah, just do it anyway, and they're like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, and then everything sort of goes the way it's supposed to, and I mean, there's, like, I never really felt like they were in any real danger.
No, they didn't really show what the power and the power or the limitations of the actual Borg, whatever ship that was that they had stolen. Like, they made it seem like it was really powerful and stuff like that, but I didn't really feel like there was a major threat at all. So I think that part of it is not necessarily that super exciting, but also the particle beam that they hit the sun with to create the solar flare that blows it up, that seemed really rushed to me. And I think that they were doing a pretty good job setting up what Tate and Barnaby would be, but then that whole thing where they just kind of come up with the idea to blow up the ship like so easily just felt a little bit rushed. How about you?
Well, I mean, they had to come up with something kind of outside the box to destroy the Borg ship, because mm-hmm. I mean, they pretty much crippled the Enterprise. Like, they disabled the warp drive, and they were, you know, ended up having to go hide in the corona of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they have to do something, right? Because, you know, as long as that Borg ship is kind of lurking about, they're not going to be able to do anything. And then they sort of introduce this sort of scenario where it's like, oh, the shield's running out of power. We can only stay in here for, you know, 3 more minutes. We have to get to do something. So, I mean, that's, you know, they had to come up with some outside-the-box solution that little conundrum of the Borg ship.
I guess maybe it falls under the same problem, though, where, like, every time a ship is chasing you, why don't you just go towards the star, the nearest star, and then just shoot behind you, and then create a flare that blows them up every time, if you can do it that accurately.
Hey, Kern did that once.
That is true.
In Redemption.
Yeah.
He, like, what did he do? He, like, flew into the corona, and then he, like, went to warp or something, and it, like,
yeah.
This big, giant...
Yeah, I don't think he went into it. I think he just went really close to it, like as close as you can go without actually being inside of it. But then that's a reason why the mesophasic shields would be so good, right?
Yeah.
I think that's enough with the Crusher stuff. Let's kind of get back to the big blowout at the compound, because this is kind of where everything emerges. This is, if this episode is going to work, or not, if this work, if this episode is going to stand the test of time, it's going to be in this final act. The big blowout, the big shootout. What do you think? So essentially, they eventually use the transceiver thing to kind of reset Data's subroutines, which then are going to give him back his morality protocols and everything like that.
Yep.
Lore drags them all out, and he's going to get Data to kill Picard. That's going to be his trial by fire, okay?
Test of loyalty.
Right, the test of loyalty. And he doesn't do it. Shocking. Okay? So let's just talk about that part first. What did you think about A, resetting Data, and B, the loyalty thing? Was there ever really any doubt that he wasn't going to shoot Picard?
Well, I think if they'd done it before, they'd sort of constructed that little device to reboot his like his ethical program, then I think maybe there would have been like a... I would have maybe given it like 50-50. But as soon as they like did that, it's like, wow, he's not going to do anything too crazy now.
I guess they could have done a thing where like he shoots him in like the artificial heart or something, and it's like it doesn't hurt him because Data knows him so well and he's so accurate that... he makes it look like he did it. Would that be better? I don't know.
I don't know. I never really thought of that.
Well,
shoot him in the artificial heart.
Or just shoot him in a spot where you think it would kill the average person, but it wouldn't kill Picard because Data knows him so well or something. I don't know.
He has like a prosthetic like hip or something that no one knows what it could have Data and ricochets off and like hits one of the Borg that are just standing there.
It's one magic loogie, like that kind of thing.
And it's a second spinner.
Okay, well, that's whatever. That's the first part. The second part is that Lore then decides, oh, if you're not going to kill Picard, then I'm going to kill you. Because I don't know why he needs everyone to be proving loyalty all of a sudden. But he decides that we need to do it. We have to prove loyalty. So he's going to kill his own brother. The ultimate sacrifice. And in a move that makes no sense to me, and it comes completely out of nowhere, Hugh runs from the crowd and does like the giant like bodyguard dive and eats the phaser blast. Why, number one? And number two, why?
Okay, let's see. Hugh's motivation is kind of tricky because he's very reluctant to help them earlier on. He was basically like, I'll show you how to get in, but then that's it. The rest is up to you. And then I guess he just has this like sudden change of heart for no apparent reason.
Why does he care about Data? If it was Geordi, that would make sense.
Yes.
But it's not Geordi. It's Data.
I couldn't tell you. That is one sort of mystery about this whole scene.
Yeah, and one of the other things that is very difficult about like phasers and phaser fire is it's not like it's a gun with one bullet. Like he shoots, Hugh dives, and then he falls down. You could just shoot him again.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, it's a continuous beam. You could just hold it straight, and as soon as the guy falls, it would just continue to kill the guy.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Okay, so anyway, after the big sacrifice, Hugh jumps and kills himself to save Data. Literally, a ballroom-style blitz breaks out, where Picard is throwing big elbows and Worf and Riker are shooting from the balcony, and it's kind of pandemonium all at once.
Yep.
So what do you think of that?
Well, I thought it was actually one of the stronger parts of the episode. Like, that's more of what I was expecting. Yeah. When part one ended, is I thought there'd be all this like crazy action. So I don't know. I thought it was a decent scene. It was very hectic and very chaotic, which gave Lore a chance to sort of weasel his way into the back room, which I thought was very Lore.
Yeah, but then he's working on, like, what's he working on that computer?
That's an interesting question. I always assumed that he had some sort of, like, weird transporter thing.
Oh, okay.
To, like, a hidden ship somewhere that he could, like, I mean, I don't know, but that's what I always figured it was.
Yeah, he's not, like, just, like, you know, doing his taxes or something. He runs
his
back.
Tax return.
Yeah, like, I really got to get that finished. It's almost due.
To the collective.
Yeah.
He forgot to pay his taxes.
Yeah, I don't know. It's strange because he runs back there and he's working on the computer. And so then Data comes in, and I guess Data realizes that Lore is too dangerous. This is too close. And this leads kind of the death of Lore. So did Lore die too soon, number one? And number two, is this a satisfying death for a character that I think during the run was pretty well liked?
Was it too soon? I would say maybe a little bit. It might have been nice to have him sort of have his like one last hurrah in the final season, but he didn't really give Data much choice.
True.
I mean, he was reaching for one of those Borg things to shoot at them. Yeah. Data beat him to the punch.
And what about the actual process of him dying? I love you, brother. Did you like that?
It's pretty quick.
But the
line, I don't know. I thought the line was kind of a bit sentimental.
Was it supposed to kind of be reminiscent to Lol? Data's daughter?
Yes. Yeah,
she said the same thing when she died, right?
Yeah, I guess that maybe is sort of a nod to when Lol died.
When she kind of was shutting down, right? Or is that just like anybody who has a positronic brain, when it shuts down, like you just tell whoever's in the room that you love them?
Maybe Dr. Soong was a little bit eccentric.
So. He maybe like put that in. Like, I'm assuming that there's somebody to be there that you love, so I'll just put that in as a subroutine. I love you, Ensign Date.
Maybe. I don't know. It's possible.
All right. Now, the other question I have for you, because I apparently did not pick up on some of these like small intricate pieces as I was watching it, but when Data shuts down Lore, is that essentially like he is shutting out the possibility of him ever having the emotion chip? Or is it that he's just shutting him down and it's just the right thing to do?
I think he just shut him down because it was the right thing to do. I mean, this is, you know, mischievous Lore who always seems to find ways to get him into trouble. I think this was purely like, you know, I want to make sure that he doesn't bother anyone ever again.
Very true.
Because, you know, Lore was not a very good android. He was definitely the evil one of the two.
Well, that's true. He's an earlier model, right? They hadn't got the morality subroutines fixed up yet.
That's right.
And do you think that they already knew that the emotion chip was something that they wanted to play their hand at in the movies, and they kind of set it up here? Or do you think that it is just coincidental? They just did this, and then the movie, they're like, hey, let's get that out again.
I feel like they were definitely going to use that later on at some point, whether later in the season or in one of the movies. I feel like that's sort of where, like, Data had sort of progressed to a point where, like, you have to give him emotions, or he's as human as he's going to get until you say, okay, you may now have emotions.
Right. So then I guess my last question to you is that, is there a political statement here with Lore taking advantage of the Lost Borgs?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't want to get too political here, but I mean, I think it's sort of irrelevant considering the current political climate in certain jurisdictions.
Right.
I mean, you look at how Lore, you know, he basically takes advantage of these, you know, Lost Borg that have no, they're unable to function, and they have no hope, they have no direction, they don't know what they're doing, they're just like these sort of broken Borg that don't know what to do with themselves. And then Lore comes along and says, you know, I'm gonna make your life better, and I'm gonna lead you to greatness and all this, you know. And I imagine, you know, being Lore, that he was fairly manipulative when he did that. And I don't know, I just think that kind of almost parallels some of the political climate today.
And not even necessarily today, but I think that's like a very common thing throughout history. You find people who are down and out, hopeless and directionless. You promise them XYZ, and then all of a sudden they're evil, right? I mean, you could even go back to like Nazis. That's what it was, right? Germany is destroyed after the First World War. Listen, guys, we're gonna be great again. We're gonna do this. We're gonna do that. It's gonna be awesome. And everyone's like, well, yeah, obviously, like things aren't working the way that we've got. So this is better than nothing. And then the next thing you know, you're evil, right? So I think that that's a very common thing throughout history. And I don't know if it's maybe necessarily making a political statement, but it's definitely using what would probably realistically happen if you were to come across these Borg and you were evil yourself, right? You could use them. I think that maybe they should have went deep. We can get to it until the end of the episode, but there's so many good little things here, good little nuggets. The Geordi Data torture thing, the Lore controlling the Borg thing, the Hugh thing. I feel like there's so many little good pieces, but collectively they just don't really meld together. They don't really hit home.
Yeah, it's true. It was kind of a scatterbrain of an episode.
All right, let's look at the cast and characters now. Start off, Ensign Tate. Not a huge amount of character development here, and not a ton to say on my end of things. What did you think of Ensign Tate, and give me your kind of 30-second review of Tate.
I'll give you about a 10-second review. No, I'm not really a fan of the character. Like, he was there and was never seen or heard from again.
Yeah, I kind of wish they just used somebody in the background, like one of those people, like, you know, one of the people that's driving the ship typically. Like, you know, sometimes you see those extras that are constantly in the background or constantly kind of just off to the side. They never really have lines or anything. That would be a great opportunity to do that. Like, this is obviously just like a literal throwaway, right?
Yes.
So, okay, that's it for Tate. What about Barnaby?
I don't know. He seemed pretty generic as well. Like, I didn't really have any sort of attachment to him. Yeah. At all.
I feel like there was a Maquis guy at the beginning of Voyager. It was like basically this guy.
Maybe.
I don't know. I feel like this is like a pretty generic character as well. Like, he's going to be like hard-nosed and he's done the calculations. I don't know. Mm. I could really care less about this guy.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah.
And now he's never seen again either, right? Like, he's out the door. Okay, there. Those ones are done. Lore. So, this is our last appearance of Lore so far. Who knows? Lore might show up in the new Captain Picard series. So never say never, but may show up in... If he's going to show up anywhere, that's where it's going to be. I don't know about the books or the comics or anything like that, but as far as I know, this is Lore's last appearance. Give me your 30-second synopsis on Lore, and then maybe tell me a little bit about how you felt it went.
I've always sort of been... had this fascination with Lore, just because he's sort of like the evil Data.
Mm-hmm.
The mirror universe Data, maybe. So yeah, I've always thought he was kind of this interesting character, and I'm kind of glad they didn't really overdo Lore. I think he makes four appearances total. I thought that they did a nice job of not overdoing that, and I thought he was pretty good in this episode. For the like, he wasn't really in it that much. I think we already kind of talked about that. At least not as much as you would think.
Yeah. I always love the idea of an evil twin. That is such a trope. It's such a, you know, that's in so many B-rate horror movies and stuff like that. Or it's like, remember that episode of the Treehouse of Horror, The Simpsons, where Bart had the evil twin, Hugh?
Yes.
And he was up eating fish heads and stuff like that. So the evil twin thing is such a great device. And Star Trek is one of the rare places where you can do it, play around with a little bit, and still have it be believable, if you think about it.
Yeah, and I mean, they actually did it another time with Thomas Riker.
That's true, yeah.
Who turned out to be sort of like...
He was kind of evil, yeah.
In the end, well, because he turned into a Maquis. So
yeah. But this is really like an evil.
Well, yeah, yeah.
This is like, because the Maquis, you could argue, are like freedom fighters or what have you, but this is an evil version of Data.
Yes.
Which is a very interesting kind of sandbox to play in. I agree with you that I'm glad that they didn't overdo it. And by the same token, I feel like this is not necessarily like the big blowout that you would maybe expect. He literally just gets turned off. And I almost feel like they did that. They said, oh, we're going to ship him off to like Starfleet Command so that maybe they, if they wanted to later, they could bring him back, that kind of thing. Lore's also got the biggest horseshoe in the world. Like, is there anybody luckier than this guy? They don't really explain how he comes about these Borg, but like he randomly... comes about, finds them, they're leaderless, so he becomes the leader. The last time that we saw Lore, he was running around with the crystalline entity?
Yep, that's correct, as far as I can remember, yeah.
And then, like, yeah, he just seems to be so lucky when it comes to, like, every time they bump into him, it's like, wow, how did you survive the last time that we, like, left you?
And yeah, he's like those, like, villains that like they'll be in like an exploding building and then like the next time you see them it's like, oh, I managed to get out of there just in the nick of time.
Right. It's like Jaws from James Bond, right? Like, oh, he survived, right? So
just inexplicably survives a catastrophic event.
I wonder if Lore should have blown to pieces or something. Like literally phasered on level 10 and just blows him up. So he's never coming back. Well, would that have made this episode better, maybe?
Didn't Data say that they would, like, dismantle him?
They were going to dismantle him so they could look at the parts and the pieces, I guess.
Well, I thought, like, after Data shot him, I was like, I'm sorry, Lord, but you will have to be disassembled.
Mm-hmm. He does say that.
Because you're too great of a threat. Yeah, so, I mean, I assume that that's what happened.
I guess they could go give him to, like, that guy from Measure of a Man. Remember the one who wanted to dismantle...
Oh, yeah. Maddox.
Maddox. Like, they could go give him to that guy.
Maybe.
Okay, let's talk about Hugh. We already talked about him, but just, is this a fitting end for Hugh? And did he deserve better? I think his... Well, I'll let you talk first.
Yeah, it was kind of nice to have him in another episode, and it was kind of nice to sort of have this, like, quasi-sequel to Ibor, because it was such a iconic episode, and it was such a good episode. I read that the writers sort of intended to revisit this, like, little sort of cadre of individualized Borg later on in the season, and it just never happened.
Yeah.
That would have been interesting to see, because, I mean, Hugh sort of, at the end of this episode, he almost kind of became, like, the reluctant leader of these guys, because he sort of thought that he would, the way he sort of talked about it was like, you know, we don't really know what's going to happen now, but we'll have to figure it out.
Yeah.
Kind of insinuated that maybe he was going to,
like, resist Lore.
Yeah.
Again, it's kind of another small little nugget that never really kind of grows into a, it's like a seed that doesn't really blossom, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
All right, let's look at some production notes. I don't have much to say about Hugh, to be honest. I kind of feel like this is a bit of a waste of him, to be honest. I mean, I was really excited in part one for him to get brought back. And then when this is what they did with it, I kind of thought, eh, it's a bit of a waste. And then he pointlessly sacrifices himself, which makes no sense. All right, let's look at the production notes. So this Barnaby guy that we just said was super generic was actually in Suspicions. Remember?
The one with the
metaphasic shield. So
he looked different, though.
Yeah, he had kind of the makeup and the prosthetics and everything. He was a character named Joe Brill. So there you go.
He actually was involved in one of the, like, coolest special effects, I think, in the history of Star Trek.
Okay, which one's that?
Do you remember in the shuttle at the very end when him and Crusher were, like, sort of struggling?
Right, yeah.
She, like,
fighting over, like, the controls.
So she managed to pick up a phaser and, like, shot him in the chest, and because of his, like, anatomy, like, there was, like, this giant hole in the middle
of
him.
Yeah.
He was still able to fight.
Keep fighting, yeah.
And you could, like, see, like, right through him.
Yeah, I do remember that now. That was cool.
That was pretty cool, yeah.
That was kind of, like, early era green screens or something, I guess.
But it was pretty, it was very well done, very effective.
Yeah, that was cool.
Now, he's actually has one other fairly significant Star Trek appearance.
Oh, really? I did not know.
Yeah. You
like me.
However, you may only recognize the voice.
Okay, it's pretty, like, generic, like, baritone voice.
Well, yeah, so he was, now you've been, I don't know if you're still working your way through Enterprise, but I know you were watching the...
I'm, like, at near the end of season.
Do you remember in the first episode there was that, like, mysterious figure from the future that you couldn't...
Oh, yeah, is that him?
That was him.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's interesting. I did not pick up on that. Obviously, it's kind of like... we've talked about before, where they use these extras and stuff all the time, so...
And there is much debate over who that he actually was.
Yeah, I've read stuff about, like, it might be, like, future Archer, or it might be future somebody else, or something.
There was a lot of speculation that he was, like, a wrong one.
Right. Kind of trying to, like, tweak the past and stuff.
Yep.
So, Laura's death is actually reminiscent of HAL from 2001 Space Odyssey. Have you ever seen that movie?
I've not.
Okay, sure, so...
Well, not the whole thing.
Actually, interestingly enough, 2 weeks ago, they were playing 2001 Space Odyssey at IMAX downtown, and nice. I actually went because it was one of those movies where I felt like I had never seen it, and then when you go and you sit and you watch it, you literally have seen it through parodies. Almost every scene, every piece of music, everything is from, like, The Simpsons and Futurama, and, like, when I was sitting there watching, I was like, I have seen this movie, it's just that I've seen it in parodies through for the last, like, 20-30 years. And so Lore's death is very reminiscent when HAL eventually gets shut down in that movie, so that's kind of an interesting little thing, especially since Lore is artificial intelligence and so is HAL, so it's kind of cool. The next one is a very, very disappointing piece of production notes, and I think it's a total waste, total shame. Hugh and Geordi never interact in this episode. They're never even in the same room. What a waste.
Absolutely, yep, I totally agree. I think that it's kind of funny, like with all these little tidbits and plot lines that they put in there, they didn't manage to work this in somehow, which is, yeah, it's very, very disappointing.
And like I said, with better writing, they could have set it up in such a way that he saved Geordi, not Data.
That's very possible, yes.
Like, he could have just, they could have even written it where Lore is going to kill Geordi right in front of Data just to show him, right? And then yeah. Hugh just jumps out and saves him.
Or he could have said, okay, instead of killing Picard, you're going to kill Geordi.
And then, yeah, exactly. And then he goes, I'm going to kill him instead.
Yeah.
We should have been writing for this. We were 10 years old, but...
Our CBS, you can reach us at...
Random Trek Review Blogspot.
555-1234.
And our last kind of... Well, I've got a couple of little pieces. So the emotion chip... we talked about it already. We know that it shows back up in Generations.
Yes.
And it gets used again in Insurrection. But it is so different in terms of the visual way that it looks, the actual prop itself. Which one do you like better? Do you like the one in the end of the episode where they're sitting in Data's place and they're playing with the cat and he has the little tiny chip? Or do you like the one from Generations where it's like the big, like, microchip, like the Max Zorin special?
The nub? Big, giant, like, gold nub?
Yeah. What do you think?
I thought the one at the end of the episode actually looked kind of cool.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that the one in Generations is way too dumbed down for, like, your average idiot moviegoer where, like, it's the emotion chip and it's a giant computer disc that you have to stick on the guy's brain, and then that gives him emotions.
Yeah, I think the reason for that is because there was that scene where he was like looking at it and like sort of like, I don't know if I should use it or not.
Yeah, but he could have been just holding it with tweezers or something and been thinking about it. I know what you mean, but I think there's a kind of, I like kind of thinking about Star Trek, the shows, and Star Trek, the movies, almost separately from each other, because they set up this emotion chip, whether it was planned or not planned. I don't know if it was necessarily even used that well on the movies. Because it's the kind of the type of thing where if you want to really delve deeply into Data with emotions, that would have been served better on the TV show.
Yeah.
Because on the movies, he just kind of ends up swearing and laughing and he gets scared and he kind of goofs around. And it's kind of more played for silliness. And it's like he doesn't have good control over them. Whereas I feel like if you'd done it on the show, it could have been like a really good look at like the darker emotions and that whole idea, like from the first episode where there's no good emotions or bad emotions. It's really just emotions. And it's how you deal with them that matters.
I think we said this once before. They really screwed it up in Generations.
Well, one day maybe we'll review that and we can talk about it more in depth. The last little piece, maybe this is nitpicky, but Geordi tells the story about when Data and Geordi go swimming and Data jumps out of the boat and sinks to the bottom. He's going to walk a mile along the bottom of the water. But in Insurrection, Data is used as a flotation device when they fall in the water, when they're in that hollow ship, remember? When they fall out of it. So what is it? Is he so heavy that he sinks to the bottom, or is it that he can be used as a flotation device?
I think it's both. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he actually did walk underwater earlier in that movie.
Did he?
I thought he did. Because I seem to remember this scene where he's like walking along and this like little fish floats in
front
of him and he's like looking at it and he's like poking it with his finger. And then I thought later on, he said that he could become a flotation device in an emergency, which is extremely cheesy.
That's like really silly, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't like that. That's like where you're going to pull a string on his back and it's going to like, he's going to start floating. That's dumb. They should have just left it that he sinks. Because he's made of metal.
Well, yeah, how's he going to, he's like this giant chunk of metal. Like, how's he going to float?
Yeah, it makes no sense.
No, he's so, right. It doesn't.
And also, like, if you were in the ocean, would he just go to the bottom and that would be it? You'd never see him again? And if he's metal,
he has to walk like 4,000 miles to the coast.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Anyway, it's nitpicky. Let's talk about our favorite scenes and our favorite quotes. What are your favorites?
There weren't really a lot of like one-liners in this episode. At least I didn't really feel like there was a lot of good ones. But Laura trying on Geordi's visor was absolutely hilarious. You know, Data yeah. brings him the visor, and he's like, what did you want it for? And he's like, thought it might look good on you. And he, like, holds it up to his face. Like, that's just so funny.
Yeah.
And so lore.
Yes, very yeah. much so. I think I am going to go with when Data impersonates Picard's voice. And that's Geordi, also very Geordi buys into it. Come on, Data's going to be back soon. And then he starts laughing.
That's he walks, scene. Like, right next to me, like, too late.
Too late. Yeah, that's great. I think that Data probably could have used that fact that he could be anybody's voice more frequently. Wouldn't that be, like, a huge advantage?
Absolutely, yeah.
So.
He really only does it, I think, one other time. That one where he, like...
He takes over the ship?
Yeah.
That's like, Brothers,
yeah,
isn't
that's,
it?
Yeah, yeah, that's Brothers, yeah. He, like, takes over the ship and he uses, like, Picard's voice to mute to, like, blurt out all the command codes right. to take, do all this crazy stuff to the ship. The other scene that really stuck out to me, there's that scene where Lore, like Data's like talking with Lore, and Lore's like takes, like it's that one with the fingernail that you love so much. Oh
god, that just makes me feel kind of barf.
But like, you know, you remember when he like takes away the emotions and Data almost like winces and he's yeah. sort of like, no, give me more, and Lore's yeah. like, okay, a little more.
Yeah.
And like to me that just that one scene really sort of hit home just how tightly like to how tight of a hold Lore had over him.
Very true. Over Data. Yeah, very true. Yeah. Although what emotions was he sending? Pleasure or pain or
it could be anything.
That's very true.
Probably yeah, like just the probably sensation. Like anger and the ones that he was feeding him
through. Right. Right. All right, give me your final thoughts then, and give me a rating out of 5 visors this time.
Since we were just talking about visors. Yeah. I thought overall it was okay, but like we've talked about throughout the podcast here, like it just there's just too much going on. Mm-hmm. It felt kind of rushed at times just because like they're just sort of going from one thing to another thing to another thing to another thing. And I mean, it would have been nice if they maybe tried to cut some of that out and really sort of flesh out the good parts. You know, there were a few like good scenes and a few good lines, but I mean, it just, I don't know. I just didn't really like it that much. I think I'll give it probably 3 visors out of 5. I mean, it was an okay episode, but not great. And certainly not, quite as good as the first part.
I agree. I think it's kind of like, how cookie dough tastes better when it's like before it's been cooked than the actual cookies, you know? This is so much potential and so many interesting ideas and little little tidbits and pieces, but overall it's just not really an overall satisfying experience. None of the payoffs really seem like they hit home to me. I didn't think that after I didn't watch this over the summer, but it was like if you had waited 3 months just for them to say, okay, put them in the jail. That's a bit of a lame-o one, right? And I mean, I think in Best of Both Worlds, it worked because, you know, they go for the big fire and then it's like, when it doesn't work, and that is kind of like, oh no, like what are they going to do? This just really felt like they had cut the camera off at an interesting point and then you see what would have happened if they had run it for another minute and it's just like, oh, that's not exciting at all. Like that's like, it's pretty lame. Like, you just get put in like a generic jail cell, like, that part of it, I think, really let me down. I thought Hugh was wasted. I thought that Worf and Riker weren't really doing much. They were just kind of hanging about. It wasn't really clear what Lore was up to and what his plan was and how he came about these people. It didn't really show how Hugh was integrated into it. So I think I'm with you. I'm going to go 3 out of 5 visors because there is some good scenes and it's obviously memorable. I remember lots of it. But I think that's probably about as much as I can go, 3 or 5. All right, everybody, we have made the turn for home, and we are in the last portion, the most exciting portion of the episode, as well as the most stressful for my buddy Matt here. We are going to pull a fresh episode out of the urban sombrero that we use weekly here on RTR, and we're going to pull out a new episode for next week, and Matt's going to have his run-of-the-mill 60 seconds to decide if he can remember any plot points, any B plot points, any trivia, any, what else are we looking for? Quotes, we're looking for...
Characters,
anything, really. If you are deciding to play along at home, I would recommend to pause this currently and grab yourself a scrap of paper. Once I reveal what the episode is, give yourself 60 seconds as well. See how much you can remember, and then you can score yourself at home. All right, so Matt, are you ready?
I think I am ready, yes.
Okay. So.
I hope it's a good one.
Well, I'm not going to lie. There is not a lot that I remember about this one myself, but that doesn't mean anything because it's your episode this week. It is a Voyager episode.
All right.
It is a Voyager episode. It is season 4. It is episode 24. The name is Demon. All right, I'm just going to let Matt write down a couple of small points here. Are you ready?
Yep, I think I remember this one.
Okay, and go.
Voyager encounters what is called a demon planet. They were like super low on energy reserves, and so they discover this planet that has like the materials that they need to keep going, but it's like demon class, which means it's extremely inhospitable. So they land the ship anyway, and then I feel like this is the one where there's like this weird compound on the surface that they couldn't detect from orbit, and it like duplicates the crew. I don't know if you remember this one or not. Nope. Like Kim and Paris like go and they're like looking around, and then Kim like falls in this pool of stuff and it ends up like duplicating him. And so he goes back and he can like breathe the atmosphere. And so they're all like, how is this possible? And it turns out that he's like, you know, been duplicated by this weird compound, and it duplicates the whole crew. And then the duplicated crew stays on the planet, and then the other one flies away.
Okay. And that is it for time. That sounds like you know what you're talking about. I have no recollection of this. I remember vaguely an episode middle of the pack where they land the ship on like a really like evil looking place that's really inhospitable. I'm assuming it's this one. I don't really remember them duplicating it. This could be one of those rare cases where you have smashed it, or it has something completely different that we will have to wait and see
until next week. I will know about 30 seconds into watching the episode
if you got it right or not. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for joining us here on the podcast this week. Make sure that you, at some point, flip on your service of choice and you watch Voyager Season 4, Episode 24, along with us. For Demon, we will be back next week to look at Demon. Demon.